960 Pinder on Twitter. This is Sportsnet 960. The Fan.
On your Friday, I don't know, Bruce, if you're familiar with the morning show. We, from 7 until 9, play 6 songs, entering into our 6 segments. We have an artist of the day. And today, our lucky artist is Beck.
Beck.
Are you familiar with Beck?
I am. Very good. The last record, the one he won the Grammys for.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, a little mellow.
Very mellow, considering a lot of the new stuff. Yeah. This is the new Pollution, I believe, here. Arts of the Day back. There you are. Friday.
He's a garage band kind of guy.
Interesting. He got into the electronic stuff, too, a lot before it was very mainstream. Now it's very normal to hear a lot of this beeps and bops, but for a guy that, with a rock background, he brought it in first, I think.
I can't say there's any of his records that I have on the 8-track in the trunk.
Well, some people on the text line will be very happy when the song Loser comes on, because they feel like that's the Pinder anthem for the morning show.
No, don't listen to the fans.
Hey, they don't have to like you or hate you. They just have to listen, right? That's all that matters.
That's what I keep saying.
Works for Howard, right?
Works for a lot of guys.
Yeah, it does work for a lot of guys. 960-960, the text line. Here's your question. We're all sick of Deflategate, so I'm not going to get into it and tell you about appeals and a Minnesota court versus a New York one and the NFLPA and a crappy CBA where kangaroo court, as Stephen Brunt described it, gets to happen. I mean, I don't know how much we're going to get into the prosecution versus justice that the NFL seems to be serving here, but I do want to know who comes across the worst. And maybe you can go off the board, but I'm going to give you a nice little list of low-hanging fruit, let's say. Tom Brady, this is the man accused of these antics, the deflating of balls. Boy, in that, 80-0 route? The ball PSI was very important. Okay, it wasn't that bad, but it was one-sided. Is it Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, who did not back his boy and then now does back his boy and is taking shots at the commissioner just within, 16 months of having him over for dinner around playoff time? And or is it Roger Goodell in the NFL? Or maybe it's another option. Got one coming in on the text line, 960-960. The media look like the biggest buffoons. This is an entire non-issue.
Yes.
3 of the 4 Colts balls were under the correct PSI. This got blown way out of proportion, and by rule is only a $25,000 fine. Well, I don't disagree that the media can look and sound like buffoons on this, because this is the time of year where talk show guys can do hours and hours and bore the hair off your skull with conversations like this. But again, if Tom Brady does miss 4 games, and if Robert Kraft and the commissioner aren't getting along, that's not media contrived. Those are serious issues facing a league when one of your biggest superstars, arguably one of the greatest players ever to play in the sport, and the most successful franchise of the last 2 decades, if they're in hot water and their legacy is being tarnished, that's not a media creation. That's significant, and you have to talk about it a bit.
It's about process. I mean, the thing that comes back after this one, after the Ray Rice story, after all these things Goodell handles, is that you find out the process is something he's written on the back of a Zeta's napkin after he's gone to the deli at lunch, right? it's kind of like he's making it up as he goes along, and who's... First of all, look, the Players Association for the NFL is the lousiest in pro sports.
Absolutely.
The NHL has had independent arbitration now since the 90s. That was one of the big things they did. The NFLPA can't seem to get its head around the fact that the guy who puts the suspension out there shouldn't be the guy adjudicating. They signed off on that. The entire Players Association signed off. So the Players Association are dingbats. The other thing, of course, is that, it's just $25,000 for the deflation, but supposedly what he's being punished for is the fact that he destroyed his phone and didn't supply the stuff and didn't get down on bended knee to Goodell. Now, maybe Goodell's just used to dealing with guys who are whacked out in cars, too much weed, and hitting their girlfriends and all that sort of stuff. And a guy like Tom Brady was a different cat, and maybe he needed a different approach. But to me, it comes back to Goodell, because he has a record. of all this stuff.
I'm with you. I think Goodell comes across the worst. The people are saying, oh, the NFL is winning the PR war. I totally disagree.
With who?
I think the NFL looks so amateur with this kind of a process. Okay, I'm Roger Goodell. You're in big trouble, Tom. 4 games. Okay, well, Mr. Goodell, I'd like to appeal the suspension. That's great, Tom. You're allowed to appeal the suspension. Come into my office. I'm going to hear the appeal.
Yeah.
What a joke.
But it's something they negotiated.
It's crazy.
I don't understand how he's going to go to a court. And this happened in the NHL side where the NHL people would take the NHL to court and the judge would look at the guys and say, I'm sorry, you're under a collective bargaining agreement. This is not something I can adjudicate.
Yeah.
Go back to your union and complain. So I don't know what it is that Tom Brady is going to be arguing, except maybe the process was flawed. But
there should be no. The process is certainly flawed, yeah.
It is, but it's a process that his own union has signed off on.
Another text coming in, 960-960. Goodell and the NFL look like the biggest fool. You've got Brady, the Pats, and Pats Nation versus the world now. That's not good for anyone. It is true. If this was a soap opera, this fits the Pats character. This is the team accused of Spygate. This is Bill Belichick and his, you know, complete lack of handing over any sort of information despite being forced to talk to the media every day. This definitely fits the bill for the Pats. And the greater soap opera storyline, it fits exactly in for the character.
I mean, this is the big star of the NFL. You've got guys running around. Sheldon Richardson, we've heard in the last 24 hours, who's already suspended for something, is drag racing at 134 miles an hour. His car stinks of weed, all this sort of stuff. You get the Ray Rice stuff, all on top of this. And so you have the most visible, you know, presentable guy in your league who's the champion, and you're chasing him about a deflated football. I mean, where's your priority? How can you not make this thing go away really quickly? And that's where I hold the fault on is the NFL and Goodell. This is something that should have been disposed. I know every other team in the league hates the Pats and thinks the Pats cheat. I got news for you. They all cheat.
Well, they'll try.
Atlanta cheated. Atlanta was playing the music too loud, so you couldn't hear yourself think when the crowd noise.
Yeah, you think they were the only team ever to put crowd noise in? Of course not.
So at the end of the day, this is like the NHL deciding that, you know what, we're going to go after Sidney Crosby because his sticks are too long or something.
Sure.
And then he breaks his cell phone. Let's suspend him for 10 games. Because his cell phone has been smashed.
He's hiding something.
Yes.
Another text, 960-960. I think Brady looks the worst in this whole thing, especially now with the whole phone destruction thing. If he had just come out in the bye week before the Super Bowl and apologized, none of this would have happened. What is your take on that? If they had just owned this and said sorry, what would have happened?
Well, I don't disagree. This is like the guys who pleaded guilty to taking steroids in baseball and then who went on with their lives like 5 minutes later, as opposed to the guys who fought it. The guys who fought it are all like, you can't go to Cooperstown.
Yeah.
The guys who admitted it, everybody thinks they're swell. Even Ryan Braun eventually got out there and did the mea culpa. So yeah, he could have short-circuited, but Brady's pride was, I can't admit I was doing anything wrong.
One more, someone going off the board here. For me, it's Tom Wells. Remember, he wrote the report for Goodell.
Yeah.
Brady should have right to privacy and not to give up his phone. If he did, so what? It's his. He's allowed to. If the Rocket, Kirsch, showed up at your house and told you he was going to look around and make sure that everything was square, you don't have to let him in.
There's
you
an
wouldn't
image
allow it.
Can you imagine just seeing the Rocket on my doorstep saying, sorry, we got to go inside and look.
Ding dong!
Look through the wine cellar.
Bruce, I've been told you've been up to some salacious behavior. I'm going to have to do an investigation of your... Rocket, beat it!
Yes.
This isn't your house!
Yes.
I'm not at your off. Get out of here!
Yeah, but then he might go, it's been collectively bargained.
The Riders game's on in 20 minutes.
I'll be out pretty quick.
Sit down and have a Pilsner. We can probably work this out.
That's the man. Hey, listen. You know what? They never... You said this. They never proved conclusively that the process resulted in a systematic deflation of the balls. There was evidence they were. And then finally, what league says, oh, by the way, you're the home team here. You handle the balls and, we'll take a little boo at them before they go out on the field.
If you as a league do not have that process in place, it cannot be that important to you.
No.
And all of a sudden, now that it happens, it's the most important thing ever. Like, deflated balls has been the top of the list for every Board of Governors owners meetings for the last decade. It's a joke. If it was that important, why weren't you measuring them every game and taking it out of the hands of the teams?
How would you
kidding
fix
me?
How would you fix a puck? How would we fix a puck so it would help the home team? I don't know.
Well, they're trying to fix pucks to help offense. They've been freezing them before the game so they don't bounce as much. But it's a good question.
No, but a home team, what would you do?
I don't know if you could have an advantage one side or the other. Maybe you could shave the insides of posts at one end of the rink and have the Zamboni guys switch the nets.
Well, it used to, of course, in the old days when you had the old arenas. So you had the Boston Gardens and the Buffalo Arena. they were all shorter, smaller, whatever. You had your corners in the rink. Now it's all the same.
Yeah, they're pretty similar these days. I always, totally off the board here, but we got a few moments. What would happen if you built a rink, and let's say it's Quebec City with a new expansion team, or let's say it's Seattle, Las Vegas, whatever. If you just built it by international specifications and fielded a team to play on that ice surface, because that happens in other leagues. You have different dimensions, especially in junior when you get into older barns. There's really tight ones, weird corners, boards don't bounce the same. But even if you look at college hockey, you have, you know, big time programs in the same division. Some of them are on Olympic ice and other ones are on the NHL size sheet. I wonder how that would be received in the NHL.
Well, I don't have it here in front of me, but I believe the specs are put out somewhere where you've got to have at least minimum specs.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's maximum specs,
but
I have a feeling they would tell you you can't do that. But wouldn't that be a great thing if you had two or three teams who decide, hey, we're going into Colorado tonight. We're playing on the big ice.
Yeah, in Colorado, you get the elevation. Can't do that.
Sure you could. You can do whatever you want.
But that, there's your home ice advantage. I mean, you get the altitude to begin with. Now you collect a team of the best skaters in the league and throw out extra ice. You come try to hit us.
Well, as you know, anything in the NHL that involves taking out seats that can be paid for is not a good idea.
No, not taking them out. That's why it would have to be Quebec
City. I'm just surprised, in fact,
there.
We haven't had all the ice sizes like Buffalo and Boston, that they just didn't settle on the shorter stuff just so they could jam more, like the Harold Ballard theory of, you know what? Well, we got no more room, so we'll make the seats smaller. That's what Harold did one year.
Jeez.
He took all the seats and made them smaller.
Who cares? Who cares? Who cares? That coming on the text line, there's a bit of that.
About
Brady. And I get that because it's just been bad. Like, we'll listen to CBS Sports Radio when we're syndicating here, which isn't a lot. I mean, it's probably, what, after a Jays game until 5:30 in the morning. But for some people, that's when they're in their car. For some people, that's when they're working. Not everyone's a 9-to-5-er. This thing's been hammered over everyone's head south of the border. And I get it because it's the NFL. It's the big dog on the sports scene.
Well, if you're...
I understand if you're out there and you're just saying, fatigue, mercy, white flag. Like, I can't handle any more of this.
Well, what do you want us to talk about? Cecil the Lion? I mean, come on. You know, there's got to have something to fill the show with. But those first four games, if you're one of those people, and I don't know any personally, who put a bob or two on games and the NFL games, et cetera, once in a while, this will be a big deal. I mean, the Lions are bouncing all over the place on the Patriots games based on Brady.
Yeah.
I think at the start of the year, when you're doing that office pool on a weekly basis, you'll care a little bit more.
Finally, one text to wrap this thing up. The NFL has looked like a joke in this whole thing since they had a private investigator for deflated footballs. However, Brady doesn't look very smart either. I think that's right. There's not a lot of winners. If you had to say who's looked good, the list is short. Who's looked bad? Well, we got lots of options. A through D and E, all the above, might be your best answer. It's 7:16. We're going to escape and come back and talk some hockey. Chris Peters from CBSSports.com on a couple deals yesterday and exactly where the Calgary Flames are at. Do we learn anything from the extensions of Jakub Voracek as well as Alex Galchenyuk? One coming out of an entry-level contract, Monahan, Gaudreau, and another, a guy that I believe was set to become a free agent in 2016 coming off a career season. Sounds like Mark Giordano. Different position. Similar good season. Free agency in a summer.
Trade Giordano.
Wow. It's like Rhett Warner's back already, even though it's July 31st. We'll come back. Hockey talk. The Flames angle on the signings yesterday. What did we learn? Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Fan 960, Pinder on Twitter. This is Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Something's wrong because my mind is spinning. 7:21 on your Friday morning, a long weekend ahead. Some lovely weather finally, Bruce. It's been wet and ugly around here. Golf yesterday could have been nicer.
Where'd you play?
Glencoe Forest again. I played it 5 times this year. Lucky, lucky man.
Yeah. I haven't been there since the redo. The one time I was supposed to play got rained out.
You have to. It is. If you're not sharp around the greens, you're in trouble. Let's go to the phone lines and say good morning to our good buddy from the Midwest, Chris Peters. How are you?
I'm doing well, Ryan. How are you?
Oh, we're great. We got a long weekend here. I'm not familiar with the American national holidays. Are you guys in for a day off on Monday or what?
No. We have just a traditional 2-day weekend this weekend.
And your nation no longer has David Price as well. I apologize.
Yeah, that is devastating.
what's caught your eye of late in the NHL? I'm sort of sitting here looking at a flat cap and a really meager UFA crop and still some names out there a month into free agency, it has not been a traditional offseason. We've also got all these guys that are set to become free agents in 2016, Giordano, Stamkos, Bufflin, a lot of these guys, and we've hardly seen any extended. We saw Kessler extended and now Voracek yesterday, but a huge crop of potential stars all want raises, and it doesn't seem like there's room in the budget.
Yeah, well, it's tough right now because, you know, the salary cap situation is so unpredictable. You know, obviously, the Canadian dollar impact and how long is that going to go on? How much is that going to impact next season? And a lot of these teams have already committed a lot of money to other players. And really, I think, you know, with the Voracek deal yesterday, that showed a team that is strapped and really stretched thin already for 2016-17, but they went ahead and they said, he's one of our best players. We're going to get him under contract. We're going to give him the max deal, and then we'll deal with everything else later. And like, that's a situation where, you know, you have to think Tampa's got to do that. I don't know if there's any team really that needs to do that more than they do. You don't want that hanging over your head going into next season, especially with the safety net that is the Toronto Maple Leafs over there trying to, stir the pot. I'm sure that the media, that'll be a story all year. So it's just, you know, these teams have to do what they have to do. And I think, you know, you look at what the Flyers are, the situation they're in now, I'm not even sure how they're going to make the room for next season, because a lot of the contracts that would create a lot of space for them are really bad contracts that other teams are not going to be willing to take on. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But I think, you know, we're going to see possibly more deals done right before the season as everybody gets it going here. But yeah, I mean, a lot of star players, and I think you just have to make sure that you take care of your best players and do whatever you have to do and take care of the rest later. But I mean, you have to give GMs credit for doing their due diligence, I guess.
Here's a list of the Dirty Dozen in terms of free agents for 2016, July 1st. Steven Stamkos, Anze Kopitar, Eric Staal, Dustin Bufflin, David Backes, Andrew Ladd, Brent Seabrook, Eric Johnson, Kyle Okposo, Milan Lucic, Jiří Hudler, and of course, everyone's favorite conversation in Calgary, Mark Giordano. I think locally people are saying, why is this taking so long? But when you look across the league, only Voracek and Kessler have avoided or have got a deal done with their teams. This is going to be a very interesting situation to follow, almost like a game of dominoes, and maybe Voracek's the first. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, it's. I think you're somewhat right. Yeah, I mean, and really, this is also the impact of the extensions that Kane and Taves signed. Now the extension that Voracek signed, there's more of a willingness. It's not just that, you know, Alex Ovechkin and Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby are going to make the exorbitant salaries. They're the best players on each team. The guys that have had a lot of success, they're going to go for the biggest piece of the pie that they can. And, you know, we heard about the early asking price from the Giordano camp, and that was, you know, I can't even remember how. Was it $9 million or something like that?
Yeah.
So it was like the you know, that's the bar is set so high now. And with the just not knowing where the salary cap's going next, I mean, you know, I can understand why there's been hesitation, and especially in Giordano's case, where he's an older guy, you know, he's for his career, he's been so affordable, and now, you know, he finally really had those massive breakout seasons and is widely respected and can command that kind of salary now. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I do think that Voracek is going to be a bit of a domino, because I think that $8.25 million cap hit, you know, I think that's a pretty reasonable rate. I know like guys like Stamkos will be among the few that will go over that. But I mean, I think that kind of sets a bit of a, not, I don't want to say it sets the market, but it's kind of a talking point or a debate point, something that can get conversation started. And maybe we'll see where it goes from there.
Hey, Chris, it's Bruce Dobigan here. A question, because we always talk about AAV, we talk about the cap hit, et cetera, but there's also the reality of real money and how the contracts are structured. A lot of people are saying that whatever the cap hit is for Giordano, that those first year or two might be like $10 million in real dollars, et cetera. How is the real dollar effect with things being paid up front going to affect some of these deals?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be interesting, especially since they're all paid in American dollars. I think that's an impact on the Canadian teams for sure. And really, I think just every team is doing what they can to be budget conscious. I think the NHL is starting to get that influx of money, and most teams are starting to do better. But, I mean, we've heard it before. All these owners seem to cry poor. I mean, even the Chicago Blackhawks say that they're not making money off of the Blackhawks, which is still just impossible for me to believe. But, you know, real dollars absolutely plays a role. And I think that you have to find ways, and especially now with the cap circumvention penalties, you can't make those deals where you lower the AAV, but you're giving up some, you know, massive money up front, or you're backloading contracts, front loading, you know, it's a lot more difficult to do that now. So certainly, us in the media, we focus so much on the salary cap because that's the one that has the biggest impact on the entire team. But the reality is that these owners have budgets, and that they have to stick to in order to either make money or break even or do whatever. So, yeah, I mean, that's a huge factor in these. And I think, like, especially with the big guys, Stamkos, even Giordano and Kopitar, the real money is going to be extremely interesting to see how those deals are structured, which years are passed. And we also talked a lot about lockout protection. A lot of these, you know, which is, I hate even bringing it up, but some of these deals are getting that lockout protection where they fudge the numbers a little bit. So it's kind of a mess in general to try and unpack all that. But I guess when we're in the summer here, there's really no better time to try and figure that stuff out. But yeah, the real money obviously is going to be a huge factor for all those big names.
Something you said just caught me and is completely fascinating. I've never even thought of it before. If you believe that a Canadian dollar over time will get back towards 80, 85 cents or 90 cents, you, if you're a Canadian making American dollars, want it as front loaded as possible, because 10 million is 13 million right now. Yep. And in 5 years, 10 million might be 11.5 million in Canadian. The conversation had never come up this summer with anyone I've talked with. It's wild. I never even thought about that. Another wrinkle for agents and teams to have to negotiate.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you're going to have to start bringing in economists. You know, every agency is going to start getting projections for the next several years to figure out how to get the best deal for their clients. But yeah, it's one of those things. Like, it's not something that I'm an expert in by any means. Like, I have no idea how it's going to take an impact. But I know that that's something that people are concerned about, and especially that it's a big concern for the Canadian teams, and they're playing on a bit of a different playing field right now, you know, and that's kind of difficult for those owners. That, you know, nobody's really going to feel bad for the owners, but that's certainly a huge factor in this whole situation in free agency, how they spend, what kind of players they can trade for. I mean, it has an impact on everything, and it even has an impact on the amount of revenue that's coming in. You know, we talked about the television deal isn't making the money for the NHL that it was supposed to. So those are kind of all these things kind of add up, and it makes a big impact on the hockey operation side of things.
Well, teams can hedge, and teams have hedged, but there's a maximum amount you can hedge in terms of buying US dollars today for use down the road. And there's, at a certain point, if it goes on too long, that you're stuck buying the dollars in the market value. And you know, one of the things I wrote extensively about was at the time was the discussions between the Canucks and the Sedin twins, and included in my book Ice Storm about the detail of the negotiations between J.P. Barry on behalf of the Twins and Mike Gillis on behalf of the Canucks. And these guys weren't just talking about points and assists and ice time. They were talking about, this is 2008, 2009, where is the North American economy going? And one guy is sitting there saying, well, you know, I believe in what Mark Carney's saying about from the Bank of Canada. And the other guy saying, well, you know, I'm more along the lines of what Milton Friedman. I mean, you know, the hockey discussions get sidetracked and you think you're listening to an economic discussion. But if you're going to make a decision on an 8-year contract for a guy like Giordano, you have to have those kind of conversations. And you just, again, you mentioned, Ryan, about the dollar, where's it going to be 3-4 years from now? You have to take those things into account. And you have to hang your hat on something.
Yeah, and that's not something that, you know, fans love talking about, and even a lot of us in the media don't necessarily understand how a lot of that works. But it is every aspect of the business. I mean, there's so many complicated things that go into running a hockey team, that go into building these contracts. And I think now, you know, really, based on how many guys haven't gotten signed, and, you know, that list that you mentioned, Ryan, is, I mean, loaded with stars. You know, how much of that is impacted by the economy and the situation? I think it is playing an incredibly huge role right now, because every single thing is kind of impacted by that. And really, it's interesting to see. Before this, I mean, I've been covering the league now for, I think, 5 years. This has really never been this big of a topic. You know, I didn't really realize how much of an impact the Canadian dollar would have. But as we're seeing now, especially this summer, it is playing a huge role, and it's impacting every single facet of every organization, even if they're not on the Canadian side. So it's been kind of fascinating. I guess I probably should do some more reading on the economy and everything like that. But it's an interesting, not the most fun topic, but also a very important one.
Well, I don't want to give you homework, Chris. You're joining us in your free time.
I don't think I can do that anymore.
You don't have to read up on the impact of the loony if you don't want to. Here's one I will ask you that's more up your alley. Of the names we mentioned, I'm going to rattle the list off again because there's a lot of names. It was 8 minutes ago, and there's star power here. Stamkos, Kopitar, Giordano, Eric Staal, Dustin Byfuglien, David Backes, Andrew Ladd, Brent Seabrook, Eric Johnson, Kyle Okposo, Milan Lucic, Jiří Hudler. I mean, which of these fascinates you the most? I can't help but, given where they were a month or two ago, the Tampa Bay Lightning and Steven Stamkos is fascinating. I don't know that there's a bigger star that has been this close to free agency in some time.
Right. Yeah. I think that is certainly the most interesting. I would have found it even more interesting if Tampa ended up winning the Stanley Cup last year, because I think that one of the things that Stamkos has mentioned in the past is the importance that this team is building towards a championship, that they are, you know, he felt that they were close. I don't even think that they thought they were as close last summer as they ended up being. But that's one. And you know, I think I mentioned the Toronto pressure, and especially now with Mike Babcock, I think that they would throw just mountains of money at him to bring him in, as long as they can make it work with their salary cap. But I think for him and really for Tampa, this is a team that has momentum. They have certainly built an incredible group. They have young players. They have, you know, found players in every single facet, and they have got a lot of guys on reasonable deals now that will be more expensive down the line. But if you don't have Steven Stamkos, how much further away are you going to be? And I think it could be quite a bit for Tampa, because so much runs through him. So for me, that is absolutely the most fascinating, because he is the single most important player on that team. I think, you know, you look at the Los Angeles Kings, they have Anze Kopitar. I don't think they'll lose him. They'll find a way to sign him. But if they lost him, they would probably find a way to survive. And I'm not trying to take anything away from him, because he is the best forward on that team easily. But, you know, they free up that space, and I think Dean Lombardi could find a way to make it work. If you lose Steven Stamkos on a team that's still pretty – has a lot of young guys, and really, you know, just – I think for me – if you lost him, you kind of lose your way, and you're kind of not starting from scratch, but you have to come way back. So that's the one that certainly is the most important. I think that they'll find a way to make it happen. I think the ownership group is very cognizant of where they're at in terms of, you know, the market and the fan interest that they've generated, and they know that they need him to continue to be the face of that team. I think they'll find a way to get it done, but it's going to cost a heck of a lot of money. I really am looking forward to seeing how big that annual average is going to be, because I think it could be probably the top in the league or close, and it'll be deserved.
So you think it's more than 10 a year?
I think 11 is pretty, you know, I think that's probably right around where we could see it go.
Wow.
And I mean, obviously to me, he's the bell cow. I think a lot of these other things are pending, seeing, figuring out where that goes. And that may, we may be talking about that until July 1st next year. And a lot of other people are going to sit there looking for guidance on the Stamkos front. The Leafs are going to be in a state of limbo in terms of organizationally, not making a decision until they know whether this guy's there. They certainly don't have the baubles to send to Tampa in terms of a hockey trade. So it's going to have to be something else. So I'm just waiting for that one to fall into place. And then a lot of other ones that you mentioned in that league, in that list, sort of make sense.
Chris, I want to get you to talk about Alex Galchenyuk's deal. It's a bridge coming out of an entry level, and it's not an incredible number. It's not a remarkable player necessarily. He's a nice player. He's not a superstar.
Apparently not a center either. A lot of people want him to be a center. We don't know.
but it does, I think, affect where the Calgary Flames are at, because they are a year away from two situations which, you know, aren't the exact same, but there's some similarities with Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau both coming out of entry level. We've kind of seen in the last year the bridge contract used less and less, and committing to younger guys to longer term. This is not a case where that happened. Do the Flames have anything to learn, or is there any notes that they could take from Montreal here going on a two-year deal with Galchenyuk worth $2.8 million?
I'm not really sure. I don't know. I think that with Monahan and Gaudreau have been, and particularly Monahan, have been so important to the team. And really, Galchenyuk had a great season last year. He had 20 goals, 46 points, really coming into his own. I think he'll far exceed the value of this bridge deal. But we're seeing less of those bridge deals happen because there are certain players have proven enough on their first contracts. I think Monahan is a perfect example for that. You want to get him on a longer-term deal. And at this stage of his career, you can get those, you know, a lot of years, probably at a pretty reasonable price. You know, if it's $6 million a year and he kind of continues the production that he had, you're going to be totally fine with that. And I think that that's kind of where we see like a 5 or 6 year deal, maybe get a couple, you know, I think if you did the 5 or 6, you'd get at least a UFA year gone, you know, year of UFA eligibility gone. So those are the kind of deals that I see for him. And really, because if you go with a bridge deal, particularly for a player like Monahan, and he hits 30 again, you're going to be paying so much more in the third, you know, after that deal wraps up. And then you're also going to have to buy out more unrestricted free agent years, and that becomes more expensive. So I just think there are certain players where Galchenyuk is a perfect bridge deal candidate. Tyler Toffoli in Los Angeles was a good bridge deal candidate. They both help their teams by doing that. But the teams have to think long term, and if they have young players that have proven it over the course of their contract. I thought Monahan even took a big step forward last year. You got to get those guys done at a long-term deal. It'll save you a couple million against the cap probably in the long term for a number of years, and you're not going to have to worry about that deal and buying out so many UFA years. So I think that the lesson for them is that there are certain players that are good bridge deal candidates, and there are certain players that are not. And I think Sean Monahan is a good candidate for not handing out a bridge deal.
Last one for you. USA Hockey is set to host the World Juniors in 2018, and they have got some very interesting markets in place. You shouldn't be surprised to see Chicago or Buffalo, who's hosted the tournament on the list, nor Pittsburgh, a hockey market, or St. Louis, a city that's had a team for, what, almost a half century now. But the one that sticks out like a sore thumb, at least in terms of its latitude and a traditional hockey market measure, is Tampa. Is Tampa really something that could work well for a World Junior Championship, a tournament that most Americans have never heard of?
Yeah, you know, I think it's an interesting market. I know that they're going to put a very interesting bid together. They've hosted the Frozen Four a couple years ago, the college hockey semifinals and final, and had 18,000 people in the building. That, unfortunately, is not a great comparable for an event because that's 3 games in 2 days, whereas the World Juniors is, you know, like 60-some games in 11 days. So that's not necessarily a great comparable. I think it could work there, but I don't think, based against the candidates that USA Hockey has available to them, I don't think that Tampa is going to have a real good shot. I also think St. Louis is a bit of a long shot. It's been to Buffalo. It's worked there. It made money there. That's the most important thing, is that because that money, when it goes back to USA Hockey, goes back to the IIHF, that money gets recirculated in, you know, through whatever they need for their program. So it's important for them to get those events and have them make money. I think Chicago would be very interesting. They have the infrastructure in place. They obviously have a captive fan base, but not a lot of name recognition for the World Juniors there. Pittsburgh probably would be my number two spot right now to Buffalo. I hope they move it around because as great as Buffalo was, I'd like to see this tournament have a chance to stand on its own legs away from the Canadian border and see what happens. But I think that Chicago and Pittsburgh are going to put together really impressive bids. Buffalo is probably going to put together the most impressive bid because they have the money. They have the desire. They have the new facility there in Buffalo. But the one thing that is really important to the folks at USA Hockey is athlete experience. And that's something that even that they want to put on a good tournament. They want the athletes to have a memorable experience. They obviously want to make money. I think they could do that in any of the markets they've selected. It's going to be a little bit tougher to make money in places like Tampa and St. Louis, where it's a little bit further to travel. And I know that they have the Snowbirds in Tampa and everything, but I'm not sure that you want to bank on that. So I'd be very interested to see. And really, to me, the best thing about this, the five finalists show just how much the World Juniors has grown in the United States. Because last time they held it in 2011, Buffalo was probably the biggest city that bid on it. So, you know, that's and it's it, in the American landscape, not a huge city. So I think that the major cities that went after this, very interesting, and I think it's great for the tournament and great for particularly in the United States that so many big markets were so interested.
Now they just need a TV deal, right? So you can watch
right.
that damn thing.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chris. Always a pleasure catching up. Enjoy your traditional weekend. We'll be taking Monday off. It's the exchange.
All right. Enjoy, guys. Thanks a lot for having me.
See ya.
Chris Peters of CBSSports.com. Interesting stuff there. We touched a lot of bases.
I'm all for Tampa.
Yeah, you and I should get assigned to that. What do you say?
Snowbirds. It's a Christmas holiday thing. Think of all the people who would take a holiday and go down and watch hockey in Tampa.
If Canadians will travel to Helsinki or Oslo or crazy places like that in the middle of winter, you're damn right they'll show up in Tampa in huge numbers.
They're already there. They're already there in the off season. They'd love to go down there. If you go to a game in Tampa or you go to a game in Miami, it's just full of the NHL teams, not only Canadian teams, but from the north.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we've all seen the Calgary in Phoenix kinds of crowds. Very red, not so much maroon.
However, if the Tampa Bay Lightning fail to sign Steve Stamkos, they may just shut the whole city down for hockey and say, you know what, we're out of the hockey business.
It's funny.
They got to sign. They've got to do that.
And it's going to be Kane Taves-like money. I do think it's going to be more than 10. He's going to make more than Ovechkin. He's going to make more than Malkin. He's going to make more than Crosby.
He's got it.
Because what happens to hockey, the product in Tampa? It isn't like it's Toronto where you could have an average team and still be as popular. They are riding high and they are cementing that franchise as a part of, you know, the fabric of the community, but it's not there yet. You need Stamkos for that to continue to happen.
Well, you have an owner there in Jeff Finnick, I think, who is a guy who, I think he's one of the guys who gets it in the United States. He's an aggressive owner. He wants to win. So it's not like one of the caretaker guys that owns Miami every 3 years.
Sure.
They find a new guy that Gary, you know, some hedge fund manager who's out of work and Gary gets him to own for 3 years. And then he throws the keys back on the table. Finnick's into it. And for your credibility, et cetera, and just for the very least, we cannot have the Toronto Maple Leafs getting their own way on Steve Stamkos.
Well, they've never had the best player in the league, maybe in the history of their franchise. It's one of ineptitude and absolute shocking how the most successful. Well, okay, so when was that?
No, I'm just kidding. You're right. They've LeFleur? Never like, had it. They've never had the last guy who led the league in scoring was what was it? Buster Jackson or somebody back in the old days?
Someone I've never heard of.
Yeah, back in the 40s.
And again, one in six.
Gordy Drillin.
One in six chance of having the best player in theory. They had territorial rights for Ontario for a while. It's a story of utter ineptitude. We'll break and come back with more hockey talk. Lots to react to there from Chris Peters. It is Bruce Daubig and Ryan Pinder on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Get connected. Text 960-960 to get your voice heard. Ryan Pinder in the morning on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
About 10 to 8 on your Friday, long weekend coming at you. I hope you had a good one planned. Brian Pinder in for Boomer. He's vacationing. Got Bruce Dobig in as well.
Back all day.
How many books have you written, sir?
Published 8. Got a 9th coming next year, hopefully with Greg Zahn. I did a book with Donovan Bailey, which never got published.
Really?
I'd love for that to get out.
Publishers... Donovan's or your, why did this not happen?
Donovan. Well, actually, we were ready to publish, and then we lost our publisher because, as you know, they're all going bankrupt.
Right.
By the time I found a new one, Donovan decided he wanted to be like, you know, the UN or some ambassador of peace instead of telling me who it was he dated, how much money he made, etc. which he does in the book, but now he doesn't want that to come out.
Could I get a draft copy of that book by chance, or just keep it off the record? I think if you're the world's fastest man,
it's great stuff.
You can do whatever you want, anywhere you want, I think.
The thing he talked, yeah, we don't understand in Canada how big a hero he is internationally. Abroad, sure, he's still a huge star.
He was Usain Bolt, essentially, right?
He talked about sitting in the green room before the 100-meter dash in Atlanta. And he sat there. All he was wearing was his headphones. So it was him and Uncle Willie and everybody just sitting there in the chair and looking at everybody around the room saying, it's not your day. And he looked at each guy and he said, here's the whole package. You're seeing everything here. Yeah. And of course, he just completely blew them away, intimidated them. Two of them false started.
Yeah.
And then the other guy said, don't hit me, Donovan.
Pretty cool.
He's an interesting guy, and maybe someday we'll get that thing out.
The Zon book will be good. Will you guys have a date in mind for that?
Hopefully launching in spring training next year, and then we'll do a hard launch at the start of the season. He's great stuff. And again, I'm really excited about what's in it because his uncle, Rick Dempsey, was the MVP of the World Series in 1983 with the Orioles. He had another uncle who was a minor league catcher. When he was 15, he spent a summer traveling as the bullpen catcher for the Toledo Mudhens when he was 15.
Yeah.
And Billy Bean, the GM of the Oakland A's, was on that team, a bunch of guys. So there's all sorts of great baseball stuff. Explains who he is and what he is, his opinions on things, and how he gets in trouble. And all.
He likes trouble, apparently.
Well, you know, he's trying to be honest. Yeah. And sometimes...
I don't mean that. I mean, he likes to have fun in his social life.
Oh, yeah. His annual Grey Cup party is one, if
doozy,
you can get on the list.
Yeah. It's funny, like, no word of a lie, literally this morning, before you walked in, I believe, I don't think you were here yet, Jay and I were talking at a break, saying, boy, if we could ever get Zonny in the morning. He wakes up late, he's still on the baseball schedule, yeah, right? The baseball players are used to playing at night, staying up late. You don't have to be at the park until, what, 2 in the afternoon, noon, yeah, if you're a keener? So they don't get up early. These are risers.
Well, he gets up early now because he has a little baby
right,
girl.
But previously, he would wake up and then he'd go to the gym, do his MMA, and so you'd never be available for morning
shows.
He
is so big. I mean, when he played, he had trouble putting on weight and keeping weight. At 185, 190, he just couldn't get above it.
Yeah.
He is 235 and coming out of that shirt at the moment. He is so buff, and I think he's going to go and do some MMA stuff this winter.
Wow.
He's going to do some performance stuff and all that. He's just a really interesting guy, has caught almost all of the guys who matter. He talked about yesterday, he caught David Price at the end of his career. He had a cup of tea in Tampa, knows David Price's stuff.
It's good stuff. Yeah. I know that.
He talks in the book about why Greg Maddux is the revolutionized pitching. And I watch baseball, and I've been a baseball fan, et cetera, and he taught me a whole new way of looking at it.
See, that's interesting. Revolutionize isn't a word I would have thought. I definitely dominate and legend, but what did he do that was not done before, Max?
Just briefly, you used to work from the inside of the plate out. You started in the inside, and you worked to the outsides of the plate with the ball and the way it moved. What Greg Maddux did was he introduced the idea of the backdoor slider and the frontdoor slider, and he could make it bend back across the plate. So in other words, you're standing there, that ball looks like it's going to be outside the strike zone. He brings it back into the strike zone. So he completely revolutionized how that's done.
And if he throws that as the first strike, now you're thinking, geez, I got to swing at everything out there. It completely opens up your options as a pitcher.
First pitch is on the outside part of the plate. You're not taking it. It's a strike. It's a ball. Okay, fine. Next one, that indicates he's not swinging at that. Now I start it just off the plate and bring it back in. And now the guy's head is, where am I? And it's the same kind of thing that Mariano Rivera did. Not to get too technical, but Mariano Rivera would move the cutter in and out, in and out on your fists and change the strike zone. And, of course, when the umpires know that you can move the ball and you got that kind of control, all of a sudden you get like another 6 inches on either side of the plate.
You get the fringy calls, right?
Yeah. And really an interesting to sit and talk with them, and hopefully the book will reflect all that.
We've got some news to break. Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks have agreed on a 4-year extension, not the long-term extension that many were expecting, but it's huge dough, $87.6 million, 31 of which signing bonus.
And $60 million guaranteed.
The deal averages $21.9 million a year. That is a hair less than the top deal in football. Aaron Rodgers makes $22 million this season, the quarterback of the Packers, obviously. This was not an easy deal. Seattle is feeling what NHL teams are feeling now. It's a hard-capped system. it's almost you're being punished for having too much young talent because they come off these cheap deals and everyone needs monster raises. How do you keep everyone? They also just brought in Jimmy Graham, who's got a massive contract as well. They find a way to get it done. I don't know at what cost it comes in terms of who they can't bring back. Apparently, Cam Chancellor now is thinking about holding out. He wants a new contract.
He didn't show up yesterday. I just hate salary caps. I like the baseball system with a luxury tax.
I agree.
When I look at baseball, I see small markets that win. If the idea is supposedly to help small markets win, it doesn't seem to matter in baseball.
No.
If you want to spend over, you pay the penalty for doing that. And the Yankees did that, the Red Sox. But by and large, I like that system. And we're in this rotation that salary caps push everything to the middle.
Yeah, they do.
And as I said before, they're jokingly with Stephen Brunt, they think close is good. And I don't think close is necessarily good. I think close is a lot of the time is mediocre.
We like dynasties. We don't see those in cap worlds, do we?
Never.
No, the Hawks went 3 and 6 years and we're calling it a dynasty. That's not a dynasty at all. Look at the 80s and 70s in hockey. There's some dynasties. You got the Habs in the early going, the Islanders bridging to the Oilers. Those are dynasties.
Yeah.
The 3 cups in 6 years is not a dynasty. I'm sorry. It's just not. It's the cap. And here's exactly why I agree with you when I love a luxury tax is if you have issues you need to address, you have all this tax money. Everyone that goes over, you now got this massive fund and you can do what's good for the game. You can help a small franchise. Yeah. You can get behind a cause. You can cover a team for a while they might have some issues with ownership, whatever the case may be. You don't have that when you're not collecting luxury tax money. You just don't. And why are we punishing teams for being good? Why does Chicago have to have a fire sale every time they win a cup? They've got too much good talent. Everyone need raises. Bad job, Chicago. Get rid of some of your good players. You've been too good at finding good players. I hate it.
And if the idea was to reward smaller franchises in the NHL, who are we seeing as winning the Stanley Cup every year? Boston, Chicago, LA. All of a sudden, the Carolina Hurricanes winning, and not that I was thrilled about Carolina winning, or a smaller franchise winning, that doesn't happen. That isn't happening at the moment.
And if it's supposed to help the small markets, how are Florida and Phoenix doing? Are they being really helped by a salary cap rule? They're now forced to spend to a floor.
Yeah.
Hate it.
Well, I deal with it a lot in my last book, the one I did about with the Canucks, where I followed Mike Gillis for 6 years, and I took my opinions about salary caps and what they do, et cetera, in Ice Storm. I just spent a lot of time talking about it and why I did a book called Money Players back in 2003-04 about the labor situation then. And I said at the end of the book, once we had a salary cap, I said, here's what's going to happen. In 4 years from now, I think the Stanley Cup winner is going to be dead money. The team of dead money in the NHL, they're going to win the Stanley Cup because there's a lot of guys, dead money, that they're all pushing down the road and all these teams are going to be stuck with. And then you know what it's going to be when we get to the next collective agreement, especially if Mr. Bettman's in place. Look at all of these dead contracts or look at all this dead money. It's killing our industry. The union has to give us a break and then we go through this all again.
Now, to clarify, because I'm asking you a bit about your career, you said 8 books and some about to be published, some in the freezer.
On hiatus. Yes.
But also, I believe you've spearheaded the Facebook Gary Bettman fan club. That was you, right?
Yes, that's me.
I
really like Gary when I tease Kerr about it all the time, about Kerr, his annual interview and riding around the limo with the tinted windows. I mean, Gary's an interesting guy when you get him away from that sort of stuff. He's got a good sense of humor, et cetera. But when he's doing the party line,
it's exhausting.
It's hard. And he's not going anywhere. I mean, 2017 is the 100th anniversary. He's there through that for sure. Probably until he can deliver expansion to Southern Ontario. But he may stay forever if they let him.
Do the Flames have a cap crunch? We've talked about how silly salary caps can feel. It limits how good you can be. It punishes success in a way. It also is a bit of a safety net in some senses. We'll come back and see if the Flames have a cap crunch. I've got some numbers you're not going to like, or maybe you do. It just is going to force you into some dramatic action. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.